Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking nearly 50 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
I'm not prepared to tell Alaskans, sorry, you'll have to wait another year. It's just too hard.
The Alaska legislature fails to override Governor Dunleavy's veto of an election reform bill. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 4th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, an Anchorage food truck opens a brick-and-mortar location despite economic uncertainty.
If we survive the recession, then we have a great concept because it can survive the worst. We're going to do great during the best.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. The Alaska legislature failed to override Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of a closely watched election reform bill this afternoon. The override failed by two votes after two Southeast Alaska lawmakers who had previously supported the bill voted no. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, backers said they had hoped the bill would make it easier to vote and harder to cheat.
Sometimes in the Alaska legislature, just as in life, timing is everything. Timing is what Governor Dunleavy cited in his message to lawmakers announcing his veto. With the November election just 6 months away, he says there just isn't time to implement a system allowing voters to track and correct minor errors on their absentee ballots. The lawmakers who flipped, Sitka Senator Burt Stedman and Ketchikan Representative Jeremy Bynum, both Republicans, say they agree with Dunleavy's assessment. Here's Bynum.
From the time that the bill was passed to the time that the governor actually got it, there was delay. And then when the governor got it, there was delay.
But Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, says there was plenty of time to implement the bill. He pointed to the all-male special primary election following the death of Congressman Don Young in 2022.
Just 5-6 weeks later, the governor's Division of Elections announced that ballot tracking would be available by the company Ballot Tracks for the June 11, 2022 election. 6 weeks. They got a ballot tracking system set up in 6 weeks. Just 4 years ago.
One caveat on that, it's the lieutenant governor, not the governor, who heads the Division of Elections. And 4 years later, there's a different lieutenant governor and a different director of the Division of Elections. That new Division of Elections director, though, said in March that implementing a tracking system would be, quote, challenging. Not notably that it couldn't be done. And Willikowski says he wishes the administration was up for the challenge.
I'm not prepared to tell Alaskans, sorry, you'll have to wait another year. It's just too hard.
Willikowski and co-sponsor Representative Sarah Vance, a conservative Homer Republican, say they tried to strike a bipartisan balance.
Right now, our system is broken, where not every vote is being counted. Our roles have not been tightened up to the level that builds confidence, that ensures people that they have a legal vote.
The bill included prepaid postage on absentee ballots, an elections liaison for rural communities, and better pay for election workers in villages where it's often difficult to find people to staff the polls. And there was a requirement that voters be notified of a data breach, a quicker timeline for reporting results, and provisions aimed at keeping the state's voter rolls correct despite Alaska's transient population. Supporters ranged from the most liberal Democrats to the most conservative Republicans. Big Lake Republican Representative Kevin McCabe, who voted to override the governor, offered an apology.
Not for my vote. I stand by my vote on this bill. I'm apologizing to Alaskans who will bear the cost of this veto.
He apologized to members of the military, people living in rural Alaska, and people in southwest Alaska who were sent the wrong ballots for the 2024 election, among others. Strikingly, neither advocates nor opponents in the legislature claimed the bill would help one party more than another. Timing was the issue. Dunleavy encouraged lawmakers to try again with another bill. Bynum, who flipped from yes to no, said he would vote for a future bill without such a tight timeline. But with just 2.5 weeks to go in the legislative session, that appears unlikely. There just isn't time. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
The restaurant industry is famously tough and expensive to get into. A decade ago, one Anchorage chef decided to minimize risk and start out with a food truck. Now, owners of the beloved El Gringo's Taco Truck have finally opened a sit-down restaurant. But as Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor reports, economically, it couldn't come at a worse time.
Probably going to be the street taco with pork in it.
Crystal and Tyler Howie are trying to decide what they'll eat the day their restaurant opens.
Am I getting the huevos rancheros, the nachos?
They've been serving and eating the same things for 10 years.
I always get my extra guacamole in there.
But their enthusiasm is still strong.
Black bean coconut queso is like so good, and then you get the nacho sauce, and it's just like...
Tyler Howie didn't plan to open a food truck. It just came down to financing. He couldn't get a loan to start a restaurant, despite years in the industry and a thorough business plan. So when he got the chance to buy a gutted trailer, he jumped. At that point, Crystal was his brand new girlfriend.
Tyler was like, hey, I have this food truck. The first festival is coming up. Like, do you mind helping me out? I'm like, yeah, I guess you're cute. I can help you out.
What she didn't know was she was signing up for an all-nighter that involved wrestling a 150-pound pig carcass in a windstorm.
That first event was... a test to our relationship. We'd only been together for about 3 months at that point.
That is true.
For the last decade, the pair have served what Crystal calls really fun tacos and burritos from the El Gringo's food truck in downtown Anchorage. Now they're opening a second restaurant, a sit-down version. But they say starting off with a food truck was key. It's lower risk, Tyler says, and helped them figure out their concept. It also built a following of loyal customers. But it's a tough time to start a restaurant or make the move to a brick and mortar. The global economy is shaky. Food prices are unstable. Tariffs are unpredictable. Julia O'Malley says it's always a gamble to start a restaurant. O'Malley has been writing about the food scene in Anchorage for over a decade.
Making this step, even though you know you have a market and you know you have a good product, is a risk, especially in this very unprecedented, unstable economic moment in the United States.
She says restaurants never make a ton of money. Margins are tight, and it's even harder to have a restaurant in Alaska, where customers are limited. The labor pool is limited. Getting ingredients can be complicated and expensive. The whole operation is risky, so El Gringo's move makes a lot of sense.
Having a food truck makes you a little bit more nimble, especially if you're trying to kind of like edge your way into the business.
Tyler says starting out with a food truck was the right way to go, but it wasn't easy.
20 years of experience in a restaurant didn't help as much in a food truck because it was so different with the storage and not having an office to get all the paperwork done. So again, you got to go home and get everything done. And we were closed on Sundays. That was invoice day.
That lack of storage meant daily Costco trips, hours spent shopping for ingredients after a full day of work. Now they have so much storage. Their walk-in cooler is the size of their entire food truck. Tyler says they've been thinking about opening a restaurant for years, but they never found just the right spot. He says their new place makes sense. It's not too big, and it was already partly built out.
This business is profit on pennies, not profit on dollars. So if you're losing the pennies, you're not going to make it.
While the U.S. isn't technically in a recession, experts say pockets of the economy are. And overall, there's a real risk of a downturn. Tyler and Crystal Howie say the shaky economy is definitely affecting Anchorage. From talking with friends in the food industry, Tyler says it seems to be the same all over the city. Restaurant sales are down 30-40%. They admit it's not the best time to open a restaurant, but Tyler says it'll force them to be lean and efficient.
If we survive the recession, then we have a great concept because it can survive the worst. We're going to do great during the best.
They'll do that partly by following their own advice.
Just keep it simple. When you overcomplicate things, that's when you're probably going to fail.
Yeah, it's called KISS. Keep it simple, stupid.
El Gringo's restaurant opened on April 20th. Tyler says mostly business has been great. And for their first meals, Crystal decided on the Mexi plate with brisket. Tyler had the one new item on the menu, a Cubano sandwich made with a panini press that would have been way too big for their food truck. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a program in Petersburg gives hands-on experience to the next generation of teachers.
Districts want to grow their own teachers. They understand these sort of more isolated rural communities in Alaska.
That's ahead. Stay with us. The Norton Sound community of Shaktulik said goodbye to Kelly Hunt at a memorial service Saturday. She was the 19-year-old whose remains were found in a ravine in Anchorage's Spinard neighborhood 2 weeks ago following her disappearance in January. Friends and family gathered in the school gym for a simple but emotional service with arms held open and voices raised in song.
When the tree of life is blooming,
Prayers to bring Kelly Hunt home were finally answered, though not in the way the community had hoped. She was last seen visiting friends in Anchorage on her way to attend the Alaska Christian College in Soldotna. During the service, the lingering question of what happened to Hunt was set aside to grieve and remember her as a young person, full of life and potential. Qualities that Linda Bacolik says she cherishes. In her more than two decades as a teacher in Shaktulik, she remembers Hunt as one of the community's most promising students.
She was always positive and willing to jump in and help no matter where. She was very diligent in school. She never gave up. She played sports, of course, basketball and volleyball. And when she was younger, she did wrestling. She always had a smile on her face.
Bacolik says everyone at the school encouraged Hunt to go to college. The community even raised money to help her with expenses because they were proud of how she had overcome so many challenges at an early age.
Her mom died several years ago in Nome. And then her dad died just a couple years ago. And she also lost both of her grandparents within about a year and a half, 2 years.
Bacolik says Hunt was raised by her brothers and was happy to cook and clean for them.
Because she had all brothers, she was the light of their lives, of everybody's life in that family.
Bacolik said Hunt's dog was the love of her life. She would often catch glimpses of them walking near the shore. There was a picture of Hunt giving her dog a big bear hug in the slideshow that closed her memorial service, along with photos of her high school graduation, dribbling down the court, having fun and with friends and loved ones, all set to the tune of I'll Fly Away. Anchorage police continue to investigate her case with no word yet on how she died. No suspects have been arrested. A Superior Court judge has temporarily paused the closure of Campbell Stem Elementary in Anchorage after advocates sued the school district and school board. The Campbell Stem Education and Preservation Foundation's lawsuit claims the Anchorage School District did not give enough notice when it recommended closing the school. The suit also claims the Anchorage School Board voted to close the school arbitrarily. The decision to close Campbell Stem was aimed at helping address the district's roughly $90 million budget deficit. In a ruling Friday, Judge Una Gondebeer wrote that the advocates were likely to succeed in arguing that the school board acted arbitrarily in closing Campbell Stem. Gondebeer ordered the district to hold a public hearing no later than May 15th to address the decision to close the school. Gondebeer wrote in the order that the district and school board were barred from, quote, taking any further steps toward closure, consolidation, reassignment of students or staff, repurposing of the facility, or administrative transition of Campbell Stem Elementary, end quote. The school district's lawyers say officials considered a number of factors in their decision to close the school, including enrollment, facility use, academic programs, and transportation considerations. Gondebeer says other factors, like funding sources, should also have been considered. While Campbell Stem advocates described the ruling as a significant victory, Gondebeer wrote that they were not likely to succeed in their argument that the district did not provide enough notice before closing the school. A school district spokesperson said in a statement that the district was reviewing the order with its lawyers and considering how to proceed. The next court hearing in the suit is scheduled for May 14th. Well, intensifying storms, warming ocean and air temperatures, rapid glacier loss, you've probably heard it all before. But an ongoing tribal project in the Chilkat Valley has something new to offer: data and projections about how climate change will manifest at the hyperlocal level. That information will inform a climate adaptation plan. Avery Elfelt with the Alaska Desk sat in on the tribe's latest update and has this story.
Jake Bell works for the Chilkoot Indian Association. He says the tribe has a lot of climate-related projects, but that this one is unique.
Pretty cool. It's like, if you ever had a question of what does that mean here, this is the data as far down, drilled down as it gets, so.
Bell is part of a small team working on a new effort to write a climate adaptation plan for the tribe. A key element is gathering data and projections to better understand the implications of the global phenomenon in Haines specifically, and respond accordingly. Bell says an interesting theme that emerged during community workshops last week was the importance of reevaluating
what tribal stewardship looks like for these resources and what the cultural traditions teach about valuing a resource, respecting a resource, and treating it well.
Trevor Evan, a consultant with Adaptation International, ran Bell and others through some of his findings. He says that as the Chilkat Valley's younger generations age, they will experience a multitude of shifts as the climate warms.
That means they'll see different plants in different areas. They'll see rivers acting and changing in different ways. They'll see the freshwater boundary maybe changing as the river moves into the bay.
That's some pretty life-changing stuff.
Things like this will be a big part of what it means to grow up here, is watching this change and figuring out ways to live and thrive even amidst it.
The Chilkoot Indian Association hired the climate resilience consulting firm that Evan works for its expertise. A 2024 grant from the Bureau of Indian Affairs is covering the cost. The goal is to identify and respond to potential climate impacts on traditional life and infrastructure in the area. Meredith Pocart, who works in the Tlingit Tribe's Environmental Department, says they held community meetings last fall, which helped identify four main focused areas.
And those are Sauk, Hooligan, Ghat, Sockeye, berries, and extreme weather events.
She adds,
this time, this workshop, we are again kind of going over those four different areas with the community and also working on developing adaptation strategies.
One of the first phases of the project entailed gathering information about how climate change is already manifesting in the local area and what could come in the future. Evan projects that average air temperatures will increase by more than 4 degrees Fahrenheit by mid-century and 8 degrees by late century. He also says marine heat waves and atmospheric rivers will intensify, which can lead to landslides. Evan says earlier snowmelt, more rain, and longer growing seasons, meanwhile, mean mismatches between species and their environment are becoming more likely.
This means that species we normally only see in the transitional forest are moving up into the glaciated areas where there's soils to do so. But it'll definitely mean that the glaciated areas will be retreating.
He says that future isn't necessarily locked in place.
But this is our best guess now.
Beyond gathering that data, the end goal is to come up with an action plan with strategies for how the tribe will respond to looming climate impacts. That should happen by this fall. Cindy Price Hagwood participated in this week's workshop and community conversation. She says it was
really interesting to me to see what could happen in our valley. What has happened in our valley, and what, and like I had asked him tonight, what in my lifetime, what changes have happened.
Price Hagwood works for the Chilkoot Indian Association and its traditional food program. She says she's most concerned about how rising temperatures will affect the foods she's enjoyed since childhood.
Growing up with it, it was really wonderful. You know, I have a lot of really good memories of picking berries in this valley and going fishing with my dad and my family and getting, you know, living the subsistence life.
She says she hopes the tribe can keep those traditions going far into the future. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Alfelt.
Alaskans between the ages of 12 and 15 had the highest rate of ATV crash injuries compared to other age groups. That's according to data from emergency department visits from 2019 to 2024 in a bulletin released by the State Public Health Division. Riley Fitting is an injury epidemiologist for the state. He says it's a good reminder that even if a kid isn't driving an ATV, it's important for them to wear protective gear.
We saw very frequent injuries, like the specific injuries associated with ATV-related visits for lacerations, traumatic brain injuries, bone fractures, and those ED visits being common among youth.
He says riders should wear helmets, boots, and long pants and sleeves. Fitting says the north and southwest regions of the state had the highest rates of injury from ATV crashes. He says that's likely because more Alaskans ride ATVs for transportation in those areas. Alaskans also die from ATV injuries at about 4 times the rate as people in the lower 48. Fitting says that's also likely a reflection of how much Alaskans use ATVs for transport.
Not all places in Alaska have roads that we can drive on. So often we have to rely on these machines to go over uneven terrain, snow, terrain that has water maybe running over it that's shallow enough. That's all in essence. We rely on these machines.
ATV passengers suffered about 40% of ATV injuries in the state. Fitting says for that reason, it's important that Alaskans don't overload an ATV with more people than capacity. As researchers from the University of Alaska Fairbanks cut open the bellies of northern pike, they found them packed full of juvenile salmon and other native species of fish. Scientists have known for a long time that this invasive species has wreaked havoc since they were introduced illegally into rivers and lakes in south central Alaska in the 1950s. The Alaska Beacon reports on the recent findings that warmer waters not only appear to speed up the pike's metabolism and food consumption, but also sharpen their predation skills. The UAF study site was the Deshka River, a waterway in the Mat-Su Borough, where researchers found that over the past decade, northern pike of all age groups ate more as waters warmed. They saw the most dramatic increase in year-old pike, which upped their intake by about 63%. An analysis of the pike's stomach contents showed that they appear to be eating less salmon and turning to other fish, such as rainbow trout and whitefish, possibly because king salmon numbers have dropped by 42% over the last decade. The Deshka, a tributary of the Susitna River, is particularly vulnerable to rising temperatures. It flows through a flat area and is not glacier-fed, known to be one of the warmest river systems in the region. It's no secret that communities across Alaska have been struggling to retain teachers and childcare professionals. In Petersburg, a high school program hopes to address that need while giving students hands-on experience in their community. KFSK's Taylor Heckert reports.
It's not stopping, is it?
On a Friday afternoon in Jill Lenhardt's class, there are a lot of crying babies. Crying robot babies, that is. Right now, they're hungry.
We push it once, so let's go ahead and feed these babies.
We are ready.
Quit crying.
The babies are new, and everyone's still figuring out how to use them, including Lenhardt.
I took one baby home to see how it all worked. And I took it home in a grocery sack because I didn't want to walk down the street carrying a baby. But then when I got home and I laid it on a counter, Matt, my husband, was like, "What is this?"
These babies are a part of a dual enrollment child development class Lenhardt is teaching this semester. Over the course of four classes, students can earn up to 12 credits at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This semester's class is about kids up to age 4. Lenhardt does a lot of hands-on activities. Each Wednesday, the high schoolers spend about half an hour observing classrooms at the elementary school and a nearby preschool. At this point in the semester, the students are pros. Walking up to Good Beginnings Preschool, sophomore Brody Whitethorn already knows exactly what the kids will be doing.
Today's usually the music day, and so we'll have our music lady there. And they will like come sit in your lap sometimes, but sometimes they just like run at you and just hop right in your lap. It is so cute.
Daddy's taking us to the zoo.
Brody and her partner sit down in a circle with the preschoolers and their teachers. One kid immediately crawls into Brody's lap. They join in on the preschool's music time.
Monkeys in the cage, they're scritch, scritch, scratchy, jumping all around and scritch, scritch, scratchy.
Afterward, the high schoolers reflect on what they've seen. Brody says one of the big things she's noticed is how preschoolers start to figure out their own emotions.
It's sharing and then like having like a kid wants something and asks like, "Hey, can you hand me that?" And the kid kind of ignores them or doesn't hand it to them, and then they kind of get upset. But that's like just another thing that they're learning.
She says the preschool is exactly the kind of place she wants to work one day.
It's really, I feel like working with kids is like one of my favorite things because I have soon to have 6 siblings. And it's just, it's amazing.
Lenhardt, their teacher, says this course helps students find careers working with children. That's what most of her students want to do when they get older.
Districts want to grow their own teachers, people who are, they understand these sort of more isolated rural communities in Alaska because they've grown up here and they really care about them. If we can grow our own teachers, students who want to go off and get a teaching degree and then come back and teach here, that's a really successful way to keep the population of teachers high.
And the students may have a chance to work in schools before they even graduate. The district's still working out the details, but students who have completed 2 of Lenhardt's classes may be able to work as paraprofessionals while earning high school credit. Lenhardt hopes that by the end of her classes, the students she works with will have a stronger sense of confidence.
I would love for them to just be very comfortable around kids, be able to just jump in and know how to help when they're with a group of kids, have a sense of accomplishment, like this is a path that I could take. If I decide I want to be a teacher, I know what I'm getting into.
Linhard modeled this program after one in Ketchikan. She says she's been a part of discussions with the University of Alaska Fairbanks to see if there's a way to expand the program beyond the two communities. In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert.
But you gotta stop when I say freeze. Good job, everybody.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone in Juneau, Hannah Floor, Rhonda McBride, Wesley Early, and Rachel Cassandra in Anchorage, Avery Elfelt in Haines, and Taylor Heckert in Petersburg. Our audio engineer is Crystal Hyde, Kirsten Dobroth is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.